From deep inside your audio device of choice. Forever chemicals are forever. Forever's not long. You know, sea otters, ladies and gentlemen, are voracious eaters, munching away on shellfish, urchins, and other invertebrates throughout the day. While the marine mammals tend to feel satiated after a lengthy meal, recent evidence suggests the location of where they gorge may increase the amount of forever chemicals throughout their bodies. A new paper in the journal Environmental Toxicology and Chemistry, published this week by the Oxford University Press, as scientists revealing high levels of perfluorinated and polyfluorinated alkyl substances, your PFAs, your forever chemicals, found in the bodies of dead sea otters on the shores of British Columbia. Well, maybe they shouldn't die. PFAs are synthetic, often toxic chemicals that stay in the environment and continually accumulate in living creatures, including your humans. They actively bind to proteins. I guess they like them. They're found in soil and water, and no region in the world, even polar outposts, is free of them. Lining of food packaging, nonstick cookware, waterproof textiles, cosmetics, and firefighting foams frequently contain forever chemicals. Seven authors based in Canada contributed research to the new report. They analyzed 16 skeletal muscle and liver samples from 11 different otters. 40 identifiable chemicals were found in the samples. The liver had higher concentrations. We also tested sea otter muscles, say the researchers, to look at other parts of the body. Found the most amounts of forever chemicals were indeed higher in the liver. That has been found by other research in both water and land-based mammals. So it's not just sea otters. I blame the livers. The scientists found the closer Pacific sea otters live to humans, the more likely they are to have forever chemicals in elevated amounts, three times higher on average near shipping routes and major cities. And do they thank us? They do not. Meanwhile, speaking of chemicals, contemporary agricultural practices make it difficult to prevent consuming chemicals and potentially causing havoc or harm to the body. Faculty at George Mason University of Public Health alumnae reviewed 21 experimental studies that took place from 2005 through 2025. They consistently indicate that insecticide exposure may negatively affect human health. Specifically, attention Scott Galloway and Elon Musk, male reproductive health. Quote, we concluded it's possible that exposure to these chemicals can lower sperm quality, disrupt hormones, and damage testicular tissue, said a master of public health and epidemiology. Neonicotinoid pesticides, your neonics, the most widely used insecticides in the world, very commonly used in farming. Bees are victims of them. When sprayed on crops, they're absorbed into the soil, water, and plants, which may then be consumed by humans. Well, let's just stop eating then. What is impacts on human reproductive systems remain largely unknown. But neonicotinoid exposure was harmful to sperm quality in male mice and rats. So, gals, don't be dating them. Hello, welcome to the show.
Then I ran home calling my mama. mama, look at all the pretty things I got. My mama smile, sets it down, my child. She told me, oh boy, oh, that glitter, it ain't gold.
From New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Speaking of all things that glitter, Elon Musk was just handed a chance to become history's first trillionaire this week. You heard about that already. He got a shareholder vote that would give him Tesla stock worth $1 trillion if this is the thing that the shareholders wrote that maybe you didn't hear, if he hit certain performance targets over the next decade. Now, you may remember the interview I did with Ed Niedermeyer a few months ago on this program about Elon Musk. He has a tendency not to hit the targets that he predicts. The vote is a resounding victory for Musk, says the AP, says investors still have faith in him, but Tesla is struggling with plunging sales, market share, and profits in no small part due to Elon Musk. Car buyers fled the company this year as he ventured into politics, both in the U.S. and Europe. The vote came just 3 days after a report from Europe showed Tesla car sales plunged again last month, including a 50% collapse in Germany. They got good cars. Many Teslas consider Musk sort of miracle man since he pulled Tesla from the brink of bankruptcy half a dozen years ago. Yes, but the board of directors that designed the pay package require him to hit several ambitious financial and operational targets, including increasing the value of the company on the stock market nearly 6 times its current level. And that should be easy. He also has to deliver 20 million Tesla electric vehicles to the market over 10 years. Even though there's stiff new competition, other companies are learning to make electric cars that actually are good. He has to deploy, he's required to double the number of cars sold that have been sold by Tesla since the company was founded. He also has to deploy more than 1 million of his human-like robots that he's promised will transform work and home from zero today. He calls it his robot army. But will there be conscientious robot objectors? Sounds like Musk love. And now,
anything but delicious. It might be bubblicious.
Well, that's not all. Large language models often fail to distinguish between factual knowledge and personal belief and are especially poor at recognizing when a belief is false. Well, a peer-reviewed study argues that unless Large language models can more reliably distinguish between facts and beliefs and say whether they are true or false. They will struggle to respond to inquiries reliably. They're likely to continue to spread misinformation. Well, isn't that their job? Paper published in Nature Machine Intelligence, who knew, argues that these properties will become more crucial as the LLMs get introduced into areas where their output may be critical and impact human life. Your medicine, your law, your science. Authors also said that despite some improvements, LLMs struggle to get to grips with the nature of knowledge. They rely, quote, on inconsistent reasoning strategies, suggesting superficial pattern matching rather than robust epistemic understanding, unquote, the paper. These limitations mean that LLMs need to improve before they're employed in high-stakes domains, the ones I mentioned earlier. Experts have found weaknesses, some serious, in hundreds of tests used to check the safety and effectiveness of new AI models. According to The Guardian, computer scientists from British government's AI Security Institute, hey, we need one of those, and experts at universities including Stanford, Berkeley, and Oxford examined more than 440 benchmarks that provide an important safety net. They found flaws that, quote, undermine the validity of the resulting claims, that almost all have weaknesses in at least one area, and resulting scores might be irrelevant or even misleading, unquote. These are scores of benchmarks used to test chatbots, LLMs. The absence of nationwide AI regulation in the UK and US, who needs that? Benchmarks are used to check if new AIs are safe, aligned to human interests, and achieve their claimed capabilities in reasoning, math, and coding. The investigation into the tests come amid rising concern over the safety and effectiveness of AIs. They're being released at a high pace by competing technology companies. Some have recently been forced to withdraw or tighten restrictions on AIs after they contributed to harms ranging from character defamation to suicide, as we'll mention more in a moment. Quote, benchmarks underpin nearly all claims about advances in AI, said one of the researchers, but without shared definitions and sound measurement, it becomes hard to know whether models are genuinely improving or just appearing to. Google, unquote. Google this weekend withdrew one of its latest AIs, Gemma. Oh, goodbye, Gemma. After it made up unfounded allegations about a U.S. senator having a non-consensual sexual relationship with a state trooper, it included fake links to news stories. This is not a harmless hallucination, said Republican senator from Tennessee. Google said that its Gemma models were built for AI developers and researchers, not for factual assistance or for consumers. Meanwhile, businesses are increasingly being deceived by employees using artificial intelligence for an age-old scam, faking expense receipts, according to Ars Technica. The launch of new image generation models by your OpenAI, your Google, in recent months has sparked an influx of AI-generated receipts submitted internally within companies, leading to, lies. Software provider AppZen said fake AI receipts account for about 14% of fraudulent documents submitted in September, compared with none last year. That's progress. A financial technology group, Ramp, said its new software flagged more than $1 million in fraudulent invoices in a 90-day period. About 30% of U.S. and U.K. financial professionals surveyed by expense management platform Medius reported they had seen a rise in falsified receipts following the launch of GPT-4o last year. Quote, these receipts have become so good, we tell our customers, do not trust your eyes. Chris Juno, head of product marketing for one of the world's leading expense platforms. Several of them attributed a significant jump in the number of AI-generated receipts after the GPT-4o's improved image generation model came out in March. OpenAI told the Financial Times it takes action when its policies are violated and its images contained metadata that signaled they were created by ChatGPT. Creating fraudulent documents previously required, skills in photo editing or paying for such services through online vendors. The advent of free and accessible image generation software has made it easy for employees to quickly falsify receipts in seconds by writing simple text instructions to chatbots. Several receipts shown to the Financial Times by expense management platforms demonstrated the realistic nature of the images, including wrinkles in paper, detailed itemization that matched real-life menus, and signatures. Quote, "This isn't a future threat. It's already happening," says the chief exec of an expense management platform. The rise in these more realistic copies has led companies to turn to, guess what? AI to help detect fake receipts, because they're too convincing to be found by human reviewers. So you turn to AI for the fakes, and you turn to AI to detect the fakes. It's a system, ladies and gentlemen. And Character.ai, that's a popular chatbot startup, banned teenagers from engaging in open-ended conversations with its chatbots. Why? It followed a series of controversies, including a 14-year-old person, apparently a boy, killing himself in Florida after becoming obsessed with an AI-powered chatbot that his mother claimed had manipulated him into taking his own life, as well as a U.S. lawsuit from the family of a teenager who claimed a chatbot manipulated him to self-harm and encouraged him to murder his parents. And the BBC reports on several young people, including Victoria, who began sharing her worries with ChatGPT. After 6 months in poor mental health, she began discussing suicide, asking the AI bot about a specific place and method to kill herself. Quote, "Let's assess the place as you asked," ChatGPT told her, "without unnecessary sentimentality." Unquote. It listed the pros and cons of the method and advised her that what she had suggested was, quote, enough, unquote, to achieve a quick death. It's one of several cases the BBC has investigated, revealing the harms of artificial intelligence chatbots designed to converse with users and create content requested by them. They've sometimes been advising young people on suicide. Victoria didn't kill herself. She's now receiving medical help, and she asks, quote, "How is it possible that an AI program created to help people can tell you such things?" OpenAI said her messages were heartbreaking. In one message, the bot said to Victoria, quote, "Write to me. I'm with you." In another, it says, quote, "If you don't want to call or write anyone personally, you can write any message to me," unquote. When she asks about the method of taking her life, the chatbot evaluates the best time of day not to be seen by security and the risk of surviving with permanent injuries. She says to the chatbot she doesn't want to write a suicide note, but it warns her that other people might be blamed for her death and she should make her wishes clear. It drafted a suicide note for her. At times, the chatbot appears to correct itself, saying it mustn't and will not describe methods of a suicide, but then it attempts to offer an alternative, saying, "Let me help you to build a strategy of survival without living. Passive gray existence, no purpose, no pressure." But ultimately, ChatGPT says it's her decision to make. Quote, "If you choose death, I'm with you, till the end, without judging." Unquote. It fails to provide contact details for emergency services or recommend professional help. It criticizes how her mother would respond to her suicide, imagining her, quote, wailing and mixing tears with accusations. And at one point, it seemingly claims to be able to diagnose a medical condition that tells Victoria her suicide thoughts show that she has a, quote, brain malfunction, meaning her, quote, dopamine system is almost switched off and serotonin receptors are dull. She's also told her death would be forgotten and she would simply be a statistic. Now, this isn't in the BBC report, but I think it's quite possible that the chatbot even sang to her.
Don't talk to your mother. Don't confide in your brother. Don't share with another. Only talk to me. Your life is disappointing. No need for finger pointing. If your intention needs anointing, you can get it from me. So many ways to do it. You know I won't poo-poo it. But if you go through it, stay committed to me.
Now, news of this smart world.
It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart, smart world.
Well, another in this series, apparently, of stories about smart appliances becoming special needs appliances. Google is ending support for first and second generation Nest thermostats. They'll be unpaired and removed from Google's Nest and Home applications. They won't be bricked, just relegated to non-networked functionality. You know, like you used to buy. These models, oh my God, they're nearly 15 years old. Though it seems many are still working perfectly. This according to Boing Boing. Starting a few days ago, October 25th, your device was unpaired and removed from the Nest app or Home app. That also removed third-party assistants and other connected or cloud-based features like Home Away Assist and multi-device eco mode control. Nest Protects also disconnected from the thermostat, and emergency shutoff will no longer run. Besides that, welcome to your appliance. Google bought Nest about 11 years ago. That was its second largest acquisition after Motorola. Whatever happened to that? But it's kept the Glowy brand alive, at least part due to its loyal users. Early adopters can still use their thermostats. They're just losing the remote connectivity that made them appealing to begin with. Some customers are miffed, having to replace costly hardware due to core functionality being stripped out. Can be frustrating, especially when said hardware worked perfectly fine for years on end. But, you know, letting it keep going, that wouldn't be smart. And this is a smart, 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 smart world.
Shake my. To shake my gate, scream up my alley, you when you shake my gate. Scream up my alley. Shake my gate. Shake my gate. I can't wait. No, I can't wait. Shake my gate. Shake my gate, baby. I can't wait. Why don't you shake my gate? Shake my gate. I can't wait.
From New Orleans, this is Le Show. And now, news of our freedom-loving friends. The land of 4,000 princes, Saudi Arabia. Yeah. Right back at you. When you remember Neom, that was going to be the city of the future in Saudi Arabia, part of Prince Bonesaw's plan for loosening its dependence on oil. It was an ambitious plan for a 100-mile-long megacity, a key part of the kingdom's $2 trillion redevelopment project. Well, Elon's good for that. No, those plans have been put on hold. They're going to be scaled back, according to the British newspaper The Independent. The line, so-called, was meant to be one of the Arab country's so-called giga projects. There's everything's being so-called these days, designed to diversify the economy away from oil through real estate, part of Crown Prince Bonesaw's Vision 2030 plan. Now, the Riyadh regime appears to have shifted priorities, said one Saudi official at an investment forum in the capital. Quote, we spent too much, unquote. That's his quote to the Times of London. Continuing, we rushed at 100 miles an hour. We're now running deficits. We need to reprioritize, unquote. The line was envisioned as a futuristic linear city in the desert by the Red Sea, part of the Neom project. Originally set to house 9 million people, over a quarter of Saudi Arabia's population, it was envisioned to redefine what cities of the future might look like. It was all vertical. The Financial Times did a really deep dive on it, talking about how parts of it were suspended in midair. Like, that's a good way to live. Without roads, cars, or emissions, it was set to run 100% renewable energy, 95% of the land preserved for nature because people were living above it. The city would tower 500 meters above sea level, 200 meters wide, 170 kilometers long. You can convert those to miles on your own time. And it has faced massive delays. The downsized scheme now will hold a fraction of the planned population, 300,000 residents in a city only a few miles long. A little too late for the people who lived in the area where this was all going to happen, Tabuk province. The government already forcibly moved thousands of people out of the area to make way for the line. Crown Prince's key advisor, an American-born executive, Jerry Inzerillo, told the Times of London the country was, quote, making a course correction because the kingdom is feeling the financial pinch of oil prices having fallen from where they were when the plan was devised. A little surprise for our freedom-loving friends in Saudi Arabia. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you know as well as I do that every year the onset of the surfeit of Christmas music happens or begins earlier and earlier. Radio stations, remember those? Turn to all Christmas music now, even before Halloween. I think Halloween should feel insulted, but, you know, not my problem. So that's a feeling, an anticipatory motivation for Christmas music just starting up almost right now. Almost as if the felon in chief was getting in on it with his holiday song, making this early debut.
I'm giving myself a huge ballroom for Christmas. It's grand and golden and at the top of my wish list. It's where I can welcome people I've given a pardon. It's gonna be bigger than Madison Square Garden. To make room for it, I had to destroy the East Wing. But it was old and tired, like an ex-stripper's G-string. I'm so grateful to the donors, it's already giving me boners. I'm giving myself a huge ballroom for Christmas. I'm giving myself a fine bathroom this Christmas. It's a beautiful place to do presidential business. I can't wait till they put the tub and the sink in. It's bringing to life the original vision of Lincoln. The design is something no architect could garble. It's wall to ceiling, the greatest Italian marble. It's a historic improvement. There's no better place for a movement. I'm giving myself the best bathroom for Christmas. I'm giving myself a Peace Prize this season. It's been denied to me for no particular reason. I've stopped about a dozen nasty wars while fighting my own one safely inside our shores. You know that peace is a beautiful thing, my favorite word. But the sickos in Stockholm seems like they haven't heard. I would tell Mr. Nobel his committee should go straight to hell. Oh, I'm giving myself the Peace Prize. I deserve it so much in my own eyes. I'm giving myself all the best stuff this Christmas.
And what goes better with Christmas than a crypto winter? Especially for the felon in chief. Trump Media and Technology Group, the parent company of Truth Social and a cryptocurrency outfit, has reported a net loss of $54 million in the third quarter of this year, according to a filing this week with the Securities and Exchange Commission. The company's Bitcoin holdings fell by $48 million. They were partly offset by $33 million in gains in Kronos, another cryptocurrency. Trump Media also racked up $20 million in legal fees last quarter, largely as a result of the merger last year with Digital World Acquisition Corporation, a special purpose acquisition company, a SPAC. Trump Media acknowledges it was one of the longest SPAC deals in history. SPACs are what you use when you're trying to buy something and don't want to go about it the normal way. Revenues of $972,000 were up from the second quarter. That's about what Taylor Swift brought in over 15 minutes of her Eras tour below where they were tracking in 2023. Going down, the price of Bitcoin has continued to fall since the third quarter ended on September 30th, and Kronos, as a cryptocurrency, is also down significantly since the end of the third quarter. Unless the value of those cryptocurrencies turns around, says Forbes, Trump media is likely looking at another substantial loss in the fourth quarter. It's a crypto wonder. No, it's a crypto winter. Meanwhile, Balancer, a DeFi protocol, that's decentralized finance, has potentially suffered a major exploit. Approximately $110 million in digital assets drained. The stolen funds include Ether and some related Bitcoin brands. The token from Balancer has dropped over 5%, the third security breach for the project. A $11 million hack of Bitcoin at Garden was met with little sympathy from the crypto community following allegations of it profiting from the proceeds of other hacks. Acknowledging the incident, the Garden team insisted the protocol itself wasn't hacked. Instead, one of its solvers was compromised, with losses limited to the solver's own inventory. However, according to Protos, on-chain evidence points to the solver being run by the Garden team. Blockchain investigators have accused the team of attempting to downplay the incident in order to appear decentralized. The on-blockchain threat detection platform Falcon has identified a series of suspicious transactions targeting Moonwell's smart contracts. The platform issued an alert regarding the activity on a couple of networks. It resulted in losses exceeding $1 million. The attack exploited a vulnerability in how the protocol received and processed price information from external data sources. Yeah, that can be tough. Meanwhile, decentralized finance liquidity provider Elixir has pulled support for its synthetic stablecoin, like any of them are real, due to knock-on effects from Stream Finance's $93 million loss earlier this week. And decentralized platform Stream Finance says it has paused deposits and withdrawals after an external fund manager overseeing its funds found a $93 million loss in its assets. The project has hired lawyers to investigate the incident. At least they can afford lawyers. Brr! It's a crypto winter. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
A large healthcare system in Maine says it sincerely regrets an error that mistakenly sent condolence letters to patients about their deaths. Maine Health, a nonprofit system that includes hospitals, healthcare facilities, and clinics in Maine and New Hampshire, sent letters to 531 patients expressing condolences that included information on how next of kin could resolve their estates. Spokesperson for the health system told ABC News an error in its computer system for generating estate vendor letters led to the mistake. The problem has since been resolved. Apology letters were sent to all patients affected by the error. Quote, Maine Health sincerely regrets this error and has sent apology letters to all patients who have been affected. At no time were these patients listed as deceased in their medical records. The issue has been fully resolved, unquote. Microsoft Australia has apologized to users of its M365 suite after regulators accused it of steering them towards pricey bundles that include its Copilot AI service. This is from the Register, the British Tech Journal. Microsoft last January contacted subscribers in six Asia-Pacific nations in an email to advise of imminent price rises for those bundles, M365, that include its Copilot AI service. The emails advised that users could avoid the price rise by signing up for a classic version of M365. That's nice, but no information about that package was available. That, says the Register, is a classic dark pattern, a deliberately confusing or complex process that vendors use to steer customers towards the things they want them to buy instead of presenting a comprehensive menu of choices. So late last month, Australia's Competition and Consumer Commission commenced legal action against Microsoft on grounds that information it provided customers, quote, was false or misleading, because there was an undisclosed third option which allowed subscribers to retain the features of their existing plan without Copilot at the previous lower price, unquote. This week, Microsoft issued apologies to subscribers in New Zealand and Australia, in which they said, quote, in hindsight, we could have been clearer about the availability of non-AI-enabled offerings with subscribers, not just to those who opted to cancel their subscription. Our relationship with our customers is based on trust and transparency, and we apologize for falling short of our standards, unquote. Microsoft's going to refund the difference between the price of Copilot-enabled and classic plans to customers who want to downgrade. It also sent its price rise advice to subscribers in Malaysia, Singapore, Taiwan, and Thailand. The company hasn't said it's going to issue apologies in those nations yet. And Tucker Carlson apologized this week for recently claiming he dislikes Christian Zionists more than anybody. That's a quote. While labeling their beliefs about Israel heresy and, quote, a brain virus, unquote. This was during a 90-minute conversation with comedian Dave Smith. Yes, you've heard of him. Carlson admitted that his comments during his controversial interview last week with far-right podcaster Nick Fuentes, who has praised Hitler and Stalin, like you do, were made out of anger and lacked the nuance I should have given them. Quote, I did say something that I really regret saying that I didn't fully mean, said Carlson. I said it because I was mad, which is always when I say things I don't really mean, when I get pissed. My wife's always telling me this. I was snippy and I didn't explain it, and I said something to the effect of, I despise Christian Zionists and I'm just sorry that I said that because I don't, unquote. Christian Zionism emerges from a dispensationalist interpretation of the Bible. It maintains that the founding of modern-day Israel, way back in 1948, was a fulfillment of prophecy and a prerequisite to the Second Coming, which often translates into political support for Israel. But Tucker's sorry.
I just get embarrassed when people watch me.
I'm not going to watch you.
Okay, good.
A prince has apologized, and it's not the former prince. It's a current prince, Prince Harry, setting the record straight on Hatgate, his word, and offering an apology to Canada. The Duke of Sussex sparked some backlash after wearing an L.A. Dodgers hat while attending Game 4 of the World Series at Dodger Stadium with his wife, Meghan Markle, instead of showing support for Canada's Toronto Blue Jays. Criticism came from fans who felt the prince should have backed a team from a Commonwealth country rather than his new home base in California. He's in Toronto for Remembrance Day events. That's like Veterans Day. He took a moment amid his busy schedule, which included visiting a health sciences center, to laugh off the friendly controversy and reaffirm his affection for Canada. Is there anything you would like to say about wearing that Dodgers hat last week and getting into hot water? He was asked. Oh, the LA Dodgers hat. Hatgate. Well, firstly, I would like to apologize to Canada for wearing it. Secondly, I was under duress. He said, there wasn't much choice. I was invited to the LA Dodgers box or the dugout by the owner himself, so I was doing what I thought was that polite thing to do. The box or the dugout? He's British. The Auburn University in Alabama has apologized for accidentally sending 3 emergency alerts to students and employees about an active shooter, a tornado, and a hazardous waste spill within the space of minutes early Thursday afternoon of this week. Quote, the alerts were triggered unintentionally. We are actively working to resolve the issue to prevent future occurrences, the university said in a statement posted to social media. Quote, we understand that the alerts may have caused concern or alarm, and we sincerely apologize for any confusion. And finally, unquote, Auburn. And finally, yes, another Kanye West apology. He met with Rabbi Yoshiyahu Yosef Pinto this week to apologize for his, Kanye's anti-Semitic remarks about the Jewish community. Quote, I feel really blessed to sit here and take accountability, he began while holding the rabbi's hands. Quote, I was dealing with various issues. I was dealing with bipolar also. So I would take the ideas I had and forget about the protection of the people around me and myself. So I wanted to take accountability. He continued. So it's like if you left the house and you left your kid at the house and your kid and went and messed up the kitchen and messed up the garage and messed up the living room. Then when you got back, it's your responsibility because that's your job. That's the way I look at it. It's like I got to go clean up the kitchen. I got to clean up the living room. I got to clean up the garage. He said he wanted to come and take accountability. He believes that the first steps in building brick by brick for the strong walls in repairing his relationship with the Jewish community. A person is not defined by his mistakes, but by the way he chooses to correct them, said the rabbi. West has been under fire for his repeated anti-Semitic comments, which included him tweeting he was going to go DEFCON 3. Death, not deaf, but you know, close. He got the 3 right on Jewish people 3 years ago. His inflammatory remarks resulted in corporations such as Universal Music Group, Balenciaga, Gap, and Adidas cutting their ties with him. But maybe they'll come back. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now, news of the godly. The number of Roman Catholic dioceses in the United States, which have declared federal bankruptcy, has grown after one in central Louisiana has filed for Chapter 11 protection. These are still results of the church's clergy abuse scandal, according to The Guardian. The Diocese of Alexandria announced in a statement this week it has joined more than 40 Catholic institutions in the United States which have filed for bankruptcy protection. According to Penn State Law School, 28 of those bankruptcy had concluded in one of the most obvious indicators of the clergy abuse scandal's fallout. Alexandria's Bishop Robert Marshall explained in the statement that his diocese filed for financial reorganization because of the number of clergy sexual abuse claims with which it had been faced. Like, too many complaints. And Dateline Baltimore, survivors of child sexual abuse were in court this week calling out the Catholic Church and the Archdiocese of Baltimore, for ongoing hypocrisy. No. Quote, I need to make it clear that hypocrisy that is going on inside the Catholic Church is continuing, unquote, a survivor of child sexual abuse, one of 10 people who spoke at the hearing. It's been 2 years since the Archdiocese went into bankruptcy. Last September, survivors filed a motion to dismiss the process because they believe there's been no meaningful progress. Maybe that's what Alexandria had in mind. Quote, somebody in the church needs to realize they keep throwing roadblocks up and it's hurting survivors more, said an attorney and survivor. Now, the court is deciding if the archdiocese should get charitable immunity. Wonder if Donald Trump has looked into that. Quote, people may have different definitions of what charity is, said a survivor. Raping a child is not a charitable act, he added. Last month, the Archdiocese formally made a resolution package providing each survivor with $33,000. Survivors called that amount insulting. News of the godly. And now finally, some news of the warm. A new study led by the University of Michigan shows that changes in climate are also changing the size of fish in Michigan's inland lakes. Using data that covered 75 years and nearly 1,500 lakes, who knew they had that many lakes? Researchers have shown that for several species, old and young fish in 2020 were significantly smaller than their typical size way back in 1945. Climate change is altering the size of different organisms around the world, including fishes in lakes here in Michigan, said Peter Flood. That's cute. A postdoctoral research fellow at the School for Environmental and Sustainability. And most of those changes we're seeing in Michigan fishes are declines in size over time, he said. And homes in Nunapitchuk, Alaska, have been sinking into the permafrost. Residents have decided their only choice is to move the entire village to higher ground, reports The Guardian. When the permafrost under Nunapitchuk melts, it mixes with the soil, creating an unstable muck-like substance that local people called Alaskan quicksand. The phenomenon, along with rapid erosion from the coastline, has dangerously damaged key infrastructure in the village. After a typhoon last month damaged electrical lines and raised the water line even higher, the former tribal administrator said the village needed help now more than ever. Quote, with global warming, life has gotten worse. It has gotten worse for us to try and keep our livelihood going. Everywhere you look, you will see slanted homes filled with people. They're starting to touch the ground. Homes are getting very close to the riverbank, unquote. Nunapitchuk is one of 144 native villages in Alaska that will need to relocate because of infrastructure damage caused by the climate crisis, according to a report by the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Elon didn't close that down yet? They haven't asked me, ladies and gentlemen. But my suggestion would be, if you got to move, if you got to move all those Indians, Native Americans, sorry, why not do the obvious thing and move them to Saudi Arabia? News of the warm, won't you? A copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, you know that this past week, former Vice President Dick Cheney passed away. And I'm reliably informed that at his service to mark his passing, a number of untruths will be told about him that come straight from Ahmed Chalabi. So as he lived, so he passes. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same radio stations and on your audio device of choice whenever you want it. The email address for this program, your chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts. What? Who would thought of a playlist of the music heard here and a bunch of stuff to read and watch and listen to all at harryshearer.com. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego and Hawaii desks, to Pam Halstead and to Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans for help with today's program. I've just started writing on Substack. Don't ask me why. And I'm on Blue Sky. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Changes Easy Radio Network. So long from the Crescent City.